The following is a conversation
with Wendy Bolger,
the founding director of the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship at Loyola University. Recently, her center was recognized as the Entrepreneur Support Organization of the Year by Upsurge Baltimore for her efforts in teaching, supporting, and investing in entrepreneurs.
I looked through your LinkedIn profile. You had a number of corporate jobs at Intel. Then you switched to nonprofit work. So could you talk a little bit about your career journey and what inspired you to be involved in community work, particularly in innovation with entrepreneurs?
Sure. I characterize myself as an intrapreneur, and that's a word that I landed on after several experiences of being an innovator or an entrepreneur inside a larger organization. And then I realized there was a word out there to describe the kind of work I love to do. So I love to start new things, and I've had the luxury of being able to do that with a little more security, with the comfort and the context of a larger institution. So I've done that. When I was at Intel, I worked in the new business group. So we were all about creating new products in this huge company, trying to think about other ways to expand their business. And I've done it in the nonprofit sector. And now I'm really loving learning about higher ed, and I took the job at Loyola because it was an opportunity to build a brand new center. So the deans who hired me had raised some seed funds to get our center started, and they needed someone who could help actually make that happen. So for me, that's a way to always keep growing and keep learning, keeping the learning curve, you know, sharp up, hockey stick up. And so I've been able to learn a lot and, you know, meet a lot of amazing, inspiring people, and contribute to the ecosystem. In particular, for me, what was attractive about this role was the fact that there was prioritized that there would be engagement with the community in Baltimore. And that's a big part of the work for me.
Very cool. I might have some questions about that for you. But in your current role as essentially director for the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, what exactly do you get paid to do?
Luckily, one of the things I love about this job is I do not get paid to do a lot of meetings. So unlike a lot of the other jobs I've ever had or anybody's ever had, I am not sitting in a lot of meetings. And I have to say, that's such a gift. And so I get to go out and be more of an innovator. But my work is divided about, it's supposed to be 50-50 between engaging with the community and supporting, in particular, underrepresented or underserved entrepreneurs in Baltimore. About half of that with the community, and then the other half working with students. We have a minor in innovation and entrepreneurship. We have leadership opportunities. I mentor and advise them around how developing their own career paths, and thinking about whether they go on to be entrepreneurs right away, or maybe they just can learn from us about an entrepreneurial mindset or how to be innovators in their personal lives.
I'm trying to get this to even more tangible level. Could you talk about one specific day, like this week or last week, and what was it filled with?
Sure. I mean, I have to say that one of the things I love about this role is that my days really differ widely. One of the things I've been involved in for the past year is I'm on the strategic planning committee for the university. We have a brand new president, so I've been able to, I've been asked to provide a voice or a coach around how to put transformative innovation into our strategic plan. So that's something I did today. Today, I got a call from one of our Baltrepreneurs who just finished. We have an accelerator program. It's called Baltrepreneurs. And we've had four cohorts so far. So this year's cohort closed in April, and I just heard from one of the entrepreneurs. She's really growing fast, lots of good news, lots of good updates. And she called because she needs some help and some introductions. So I got to hear all of her excitement and her thanks, and then I'm going to connect her with some additional people. So I love love hearing from the folks who've been through the program, staying in touch. And, you know, yesterday, there are not as many students around campus right now, but yesterday I saw a couple times a student who's heartbroken. And so he's been coming by. And so we're talking about, you know, how to move on in your life. You know, it's not always just about career. Sometimes it's your personal life as well.
Oh, for sure. I think most of the programs that support entrepreneurs, they support people much more than they support the business.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned this Baltipreneur program. So could you talk about programs that you are running, some accelerator programs in your center?
Sure. We do one cohort a year of the Baltipreneurs Accelerator. Over the course of about 4 months, we have a cohort of about 10 entrepreneurs. Sometimes that can mean as many 10 companies. Sometimes that could be 15 people, depending. We'll bring co-founders in. Sometimes the student teams will have several members on the team. But that group will meet weekly, 10 times. They get a stipend. They're assigned a mentor. They get one-on-one pitch coaching. They have access to special corporate research in the library, competitive research. And at the end of all that, they will they pitch at a demo day in the spring. And we provide awards at that event for performance over the course of the accelerator. One of the things that we do differently in Baltipreneurs is that the awards are chosen by the members of the cohort themselves. So peers are voting for peers. A lot of folks will bring in sort of a VIP panel of judges who may or may not really know much about or be able to judge based on a very short pitch. You know, the sort of someone's the quality of their business model or the viability, and certainly they can't judge sort of the progress someone has made. And so that's why we turn, it's a model developed by Village Capital. And we turn to this peer selection model to have the members of the cohort pick each other.
Very cool. I haven't heard of this idea, but it's definitely intriguing.
It really helps create a sense of community within the cohort so that it's not competitive as much as, right, they're paying attention, they're evaluating each other, but they're also, they recognize that they're there to support each other.
There was one idea I took away from the GCEC conference that you organized specifically regarding pitch competitions, that it's much more impactful to distribute like small sums of money versus give big chunks of money to few groups. How does it work in your program?
Yeah, I'm glad that's something you picked up. I sort of hypothesized that based on very early on in the job I served as a mentor in another program and worked with a really great entrepreneur who didn't happen to win the big award. And I think it was a single award event. And she was really devastated because she sort of had won a lot of recognition early on in the program. So it seemed like she was set to win. And she had foregone some revenue in order to commit to this contest. So that seems very dangerous. And it puts, I think, entrepreneurs in kind of a bad position where they have to make some choices about whether to invest in the program or whether to actually invest in their business, which I don't think is good for us to set them up for that type of a choice. It's a Sophie's choice kind of thing, right? So yeah, I agree with you. And we usually give out about 25,000 in awards. And so we've done this last one, we did five gifts, five different awards of 5,000 each. And they're just, you know, grants, they're not investments. They're not loans. So, the entrepreneurs can do with them what they want. I had at one point just had a step where it was like platinum, gold, silver, and, you know, went down a couple thousand with each one. And the point difference between platinum and gold, first and second, was so small that it really didn't seem right. So we did switch it up a little bit. And this year we created categories for the awards. So, you know, most likely to grow 10x, most best social impact, different awards like that. Best hustle. We had the hustle award as well this year.
Very cool to hear when good ideas get implemented so quickly. How competitive is your accelerator program and who can get in?
It has become very competitive. We've had good luck in terms of getting the word out, and there's been a lot of interest. So the second year we got, and this was COVID, so, you know, it was maybe, we definitely had an elevated number of applications, but we got over 80 applications for about 10 spots. We took 13 that year. Normally we get over 60 applications. So it is extremely competitive. It might be harder to get into than an undergrad at the university level, right? And our applicants come from the community, from Baltimore, folks who, you know, sort of adults who live in the city. And we preference entrepreneurs of color and women founders and others who have been, you know, so we've had some vets and folks who identify as LGBTQ+. So we're looking for a diverse cohort. We always, in addition to the entrepreneurs from Baltimore, we always have a faculty entrepreneur and or a couple student teams in the mix as well.
Okay, so they are working together essentially.
Yeah, yeah. And it's wonderful for the students because they feel that they've been recognized as entrepreneurs in a different way. You know, this is not like a student program. This is the real deal. So it's wonderful for their confidence, and they get really excited, and they just, these are hardworking students, obviously, to be opting into a program like this in the first place. And they really bring it up a level when they've been included in a cohort like this. And then the entrepreneurs, you know, the other entrepreneurs tend to be just very generous with them and very welcoming. And it's a really nice environment. We work hard, right, to make sure that everybody is comfortable and collaborates. This year's group had their own WhatsApp group, and it was, and I stay off of it intentionally, but what I hear is that it was really, really active and supportive.
I'm really curious, when you have a competitive program, how do you make those decisions? Could you talk a little bit about your selection process?
Oh, how we choose who gets in?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. So everybody gets read twice. So we have an evaluation committee. I have, as many as 12, or I think we've had 15 volunteers who help us read through all those applications. And there's a rubric that we use to score. And then I read all of them. So that's how they get read twice. And so we pick the folks who score the highest. And again, we all are also looking for, you know, those categories that to see how folks identify, to make sure that, you know, we have good representation of women and people of color. I have an amazing committee of volunteers. And I can say that because we don't tend to disagree very much. So they agree with me. It really becomes pretty clear in the applications who's ready for the program, which is what I'm looking for most of all. Not necessarily, most everybody has revenue. If they don't have revenue, they have really significant customer discovery and or maybe, you know, a contract in place. Obviously, the more tech-based or the apps and platforms are going to be a little bit less likely to have the revenue yet. But if they have good potential and momentum, they'll be considered. So that's a big, you know, that's a pretty bright line that cuts out, you know, a lot of folks who aren't quite ready yet. We definitely have people who have applied a couple of years in a row. And so we look at that to see what progress have they made. And again, we're looking for, did you actually study the program? Can you tell me, we ask, you know, what do you want to get out of this program? And I'm looking to see whether they really understand what we do provide. So they kind of did their homework and they're coming in ready to learn. We also ask folks what they would like to teach. So there's sort of an each one teach one element, and every member of the cohort gets about 20 minutes at some point to teach the rest. So is there something of value that they can bring to the rest of the cohort? So those are a few of, and you know, we're looking for creativity as well, of course.
Do you give yourself the freedom to override the committee?
I haven't had to yet.
Okay.
Luckily.
You.
Yeah, because I don't really want to have to think about that question.
Okay.
So, no, but really, it's I've been paying attention, and in terms of, you know, again, I average the scores to see. And really, it's not as hard as you would think. I mean, there's always a couple of folks that you really hate to say no to. So I usually, you know, I sort of tier it. There's like the obvious folks who don't make the cut. There's the obvious folks that should be considered. And then there's a kind of a middle ground. And we are going to maybe play a little bit with sort of a wait list potentially next year. So, you know, to create a little more room.
I'm asking because for the mentorship program I was involved in, we also had like an intake team.
Yeah.
And I deliberately gave myself the freedom to override, to place bets on companies mm-hmm. that didn't exactly fit the mark. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to experiment as a program, like, can we help that type of organization? So I was curious in what way it was set up. And people who were on the intake team, they understood that this is more like a recommendation. And yeah. the program administration makes the final decision. And usually you follow what the intake team recommends. But I felt it was good to have the freedom to make a bet, which is different from your typical criteria, and to see if those need to be adjusted.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, you're running the program. You should have some discretion around if there's somebody you really believe in, then you probably can make a difference for them just because of that. That passion that you might share.
I agree. You mentioned that a big piece of the program is mentorship. Could you talk a little mm-hmm. bit about this side? How do you select mentors and what does the matching process look like?
Mm-hmm. So it's a very curated, I think is the new term for something like this, a very curated process in that I don't have a mentor pool per se. So each cohort, when they confirm, and that is something where I have put someone on a wait list where it's like, we will let you in if we can find the right mentor for you. And we're not sure if we can. So that is where we have had people, and we have been able to find that person. But in one case, I think we added folks like a week or two late because it was a very specialized need that they had for their mentor. So I'm out there looking to meet these specialized needs. I look at this, what the company says they need to learn, and I go and see who I can find who has expertise, you know, either with that industry or with that need or that stage that they're in. We have great luck when we go to the Loyola Alumni Network and recruit mentors from there. They are the most committed. You know, they're loyal to their school. They want to give back and they're really excited about the program. And of course, they all say these are folks who, you know, most of them graduated a good time ago and have had their success. And they say, I just wish that there was a program like this when I was a student, that there had been a program like this. And so they're excited to see how the school has changed and added this kind of, you know, offering. So we love working with the alums, but we don't always find, you know, 10 alums necessarily who are available. And I just work through I go power user on LinkedIn and just think about who I know. And so we have definitely cold called folks and just said, we've got this program. And usually they're inspired enough about the work that we're doing because they're in a close enough line already that if I can get a call with them, like we're doing now, Igor, like I can usually talk them into getting involved. And then, you know, some folks are like friends, neighbors, former colleagues from Intel, things like that. And we will call on them. And that's also really exciting to broaden the idea beyond just, right, sort of the Loyola network, but across the country. We do try to make sure that there's an active Baltimore contingent in the mentors because we want to grow, you know, sort of this place-based sense of the ecosystem.
I like to get to like the, a deeper level of detail. So could you talk a little bit about the journey as a mentor? So they get the cold call from you. You talk them into saying yes, they agree. So what happens next? What does this journey look like for someone agreeing to join your program as a mentor?
So if they agree to mentor, then we get them together on a Zoom call that's a kickoff meeting. So everybody gets a chance to meet each other. I find the mentors really curious about who the other mentors are, and they're naturally outgoing people and they're networkers. So they want to meet the other mentors as well. So we'll do that and answer their questions about the program. I like to bring on an expert to that call, whether it's a faculty member, you know, who has expertise in coaching and mentorship. And so we've had that kind of voice in those kickoff calls. We've also brought on folks to demo some of the different learning platforms that we use through the program so that they get some familiarity of how to take advantage of those platforms. So there's a kickoff, and then we really place the onus on the entrepreneurs to reach out to the mentors. So they're responsible for setting up the meetings. I don't want to ask any more of the mentors than they're already given. We tell them it's a commitment of an hour a week over 10 weeks. And again, the mentee is the one who sort of sets up that schedule. In terms of what they're working on, mentors can access the two platforms that we use, and they can see the curriculum, and they can see progress that their company is making in terms of milestones. The companies set their own milestones and get sign off from their mentor about that for the course of the program. And so that's sort of the map that they're using to walk through in their weekly calls. We do a midterm check-in as well. That's another Zoom call to just find out how it's going. That one tends to be a little more venting, you know, and sort of troubleshooting among the mentees, or sorry, among the mentors. Like, how's it going with your person? How are you handling this? Is it normal, you know, that X, you know, is it okay that Y, right? So that's a lot of reassurances that we give about mid-program. And then if we're lucky, if they're in town, if they can make it, we see the mentors at demo day. They've probably been working pretty intensely right before on some pitch feedback. And so we can consider demo day to be a big celebration. That, you know, everyone is welcome to. So it's always great when they can come to that event.
And I can't resist the curiosity to ask, which platforms do you use for this program?
So we've been part of a pilot that's been funded by TEDCO, which is our state economic development corporation, and MBIA, which is the Maryland Business Innovation Association. They have funded us to use a platform called FounderTrack. And so we're using that for milestones and additional optional homework for the entrepreneurs. And then the sort of the bulk of the curriculum is in Aspire, which is the university's sort of basic coursework platform.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
And coming back to the mentor journey. So once the mentor completes the program, will you tap them again for the next cohort, or is it more like one and done and you try to use different people?
I've always had, well, except for the first time, right? But I've always had one, at least one veteran come back. If they want to come back, I want to use them. Many of them don't have capacity to keep coming back. A lot of them are going to keep working with that they're only committed for the course of the program, but a lot of them will keep working with the person they've matched with. So that might be as much as they want to do. But anyway, we always have some folks in it, and the repeat folks are great to work with because obviously they have great perspective.
In the program, I was involved in it in a way Charlotte mentors would like stay on forever. Or really? Not forever. They really stayed on. Like not all, but the core people who joined the program when we launched, a lot of them stayed on through the experience. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the magic of team mentoring that we discussed separately.
Yes.
When members connect and a little bit less intense commitment, because 1 hour a week is more than like meeting just once a month with a founder. But that's an interesting thing.
Yeah. No, that's really good to hear. You've obviously found some really great committed folks. But yeah, this is kind of a different, it's a short-term ask. And that, so we set the expectations that way. I will share a little tidbit. I've been thinking a lot about mentoring just since we've been talking. And so I was sort of floating some ideas. I told you I was at an event last night and talking to some other colleagues who, as it turns out, started a mentoring program at a neighboring school right here in town. And they gave me some great feedback, which was that they never sort of permanently matched a mentor with a student until they had a chance to meet first. So I'm matching folks sort of blind, and I'm guessing that they're going to get along and, you know, crossing my fingers and obviously providing the support we can to make that all go well. But I thought it was a great insight that this colleague shared, which was, you know, let them meet first and then they decide whether this is just a one-time conversation, fine, you know, or they really want to continue. So that element of choice to, I don't know. It hadn't occurred to me before. I don't know why, but that seemed really a great learning.
I like it. From one of the interviews I did with Jodi Eckert, she shared that they do in the mentorship program something similar to speed dating,
yeah,
where entrepreneurs meet, but they don't do the matches. They just identify preferences. These are the people I liked. These are the people I didn't like, and they take it into making better choices.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so important to acknowledge the personal chemistry and all of those factors. I met with a mentor last week who was mentoring in another program. He's not going to return to the other one. He is returning to ours. I don't think it's because our program's so much better. You know, that'd be nice to say, but I think the reality is that he hit it off better with the entrepreneur who he happened to be matched with in our program. So it colored the experience.
How do you evaluate success, and is there a success story that you are particularly proud of?
So within the program, I ask entrepreneurs to set their own goals, and so to define their own success, define it success in their own terms. So I think everybody has a different metric, and I'm not going to pose mine. You know, we certainly, not everyone we have is going to go for VC by any means, or is going to, you know, have an exit, IPO, an exit. So we ask them, you know, where they want to be. And so, you know, I think we're successful when they get to where they tell me, I never thought I would be here, right? It's beyond their expectations. I never dreamed. I never imagined, right? This is not, I never could have done this without your program. So I heard that today from my entrepreneur who called me, you know, so. I'm having that made my day, and I don't get that call every day, but I get them often enough you said something earlier about these are people we're talking about. These are humans with lives, right? That an entrepreneur is a whole person. And, you know, I very much am happy to see where folks just have a growth in confidence. And I see that impacts the way they're able to run their business. And so I think that's something, if we can, you know, give people more agency, empower them, they are able to lead with more success. Meaning, you know, so what do we track? We track how many folks they've hired, how much revenue growth they've had, if they have had investments, if they are going into other programs, and, you know, are they getting press? Again, we to ask them, tell us, you know, what your recent wins have been, and however you define that.
I love it. And I think a lot of organizations are doing the same things. So essentially, we are tracking the activity as a leading indicator. So if they're not engaging, it's unlikely they will be very successful. Yeah. It might be, but that's a leading indicator. In terms of a specific success story, do you have one that you could share?
Oh, gosh. So we have a company that's acquired another company, and they're in grocery stores all across the region, Stone's Throw Hash. They do like prepared breakfast product. Several of our food businesses really have done well. We have a cheesecake company that is all over. He's Kroger, I think. So he's going distributing nationally with Kroger. We have a grilled cheese company, Hiatus Cheesecake. The grilled cheese is a friendly bread, and they are with Giant now, right? Again, getting national distribution. So in the food, those are some of the stories. The tech companies, we have Ashley Williams is the founder of Climb, which is an app that's used in schools to help with mindfulness and for students. And she has had just serial investments from, again, from TEDCO, which I've mentioned, our state economic development authority, also from Techstars. So she's been in Techstars. And she has some other things that are not being announced yet, but really good progress in the VC world arena. Who else? I mean, the woman who I spoke to today started out with about 100 Instagram followers and told us that was her biggest fear, was sort of how to tackle social media, and something that she was really avoiding and not wanting to embrace as a founder. And today showed me she's got 20,000 followers. One of her reels just got 1 million views, and all that, you know, social media is resulting in some paid speaking gigs with some potential clients who she'll be following up with. So she made some goals for herself around social media. It brought her into a completely new space in terms of her comfort with putting herself out there and the responses that she was getting on that. And it led to leading to customers. And her business is, it's called HBCU College Costs. And it's all about how to open up access and offer, you know, grants and tools for getting college education for free. Yeah.
There are a lot of success stories. I'm actually amazed that the center has been around only since 2018, correct?
That's right. Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations. That's very cool.
Yeah.
In terms of running the whole operation, how hands-on are you and your team? And you could talk a little bit about your team. Are involved, like, what are the points where you have to kind of be in the middle of things for each cohort?
Yeah, we're here every night, you know, every night of the program, leading the program, you know, recruiting the applications, reading the applications, running the program. It's me, and I have a program administrator who's wonderful. Her name's Jennifer Sullivan, and she stays every night for the accelerated program. And, you know, and then of course, we're also working with students when we're not running the accelerator. So it's very hands-on. The other team member is an entrepreneur in residence. That's actually an open position right now. So we're recruiting and looking for the next person there. But that is a faculty role that, we see it actually in the new person will add some capacity, we think, to what we're doing. So in some ways, we'll be growing the team by bringing that person on.
That kind of completes my picture in my head in a very tangible way of this accelerator program. Is there anything else or other activities that your center is involved with beyond this accelerator?
Yeah, well, a lot of the things that we do, again, in the community are sort of part of the accelerator. So we have a student consulting group, and they offer services back to accelerator. They also offer, anyone can apply for short-term consulting projects with the student consulting group. So that's a student-run, it's a club, but we integrate with them. We also are starting a new program we piloted this year, women's boot camps. And it's like conceived of as a pre-accelerator program. So we do that to get the word out, especially to women entrepreneurs, about the program and hopefully increase, you know, their participation in it. So we basically did these evening, women boot camp evening was a pitch competition. We gave away, I think, $1,000 or maybe $500 prize. Again, the women voted for each other that evening and then asked questions about, we brought in some alums, women alums from the program. They asked questions. How was it? What did you get out of it? How do you, you know, get the most out of it if you are accepted? Tips on how to do a good application. Because you can't really assume actually that people know how to write a good application, just something I've learned. So I really try to help coach people through that. And those have been amazing. So we're going to start doing more of those. The women who attended, several of them said they had never pitched before. They had never told anyone in public about their idea. So several of them were very early stage, and they would not necessarily be quite ready yet for our program, but they made friends right that night. It was 2 hours in the library, but it's in person and it's very interactive, and they, you know, exchange contact information, and I expect that, you know, they will continue to be supporters for each other as they do grow past idea stage and hopefully someday, you know, come into our program or another accelerator program. So the boot camps are something that we're going to grow and do more of those. For the students, we have a steering committee. So I work with students they help us lead the center, and they put on events, and we do sort of introduce them to ideas about leadership and about developing an entrepreneurial mindset.
I really liked how you approached this in a very, I would say, startup way, where there is a focal point or the core value proposition, and everything else seems to add to this value proposition versus like having separate programs that require a different form of commitment. This is pretty cool.
Well, I mean, Igor, I think it's really just a reflection of constraints, right? I mean, so it's like, we knew that we had to build an accelerator, and we're trying to grow our impact and grow our program as much as we can with limited staff and limited funds, right? So everything sort of builds off each other. And I think that's a natural way, right, for us to grow. And And that's why startups work that way too.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I remember you also have like fundraising experience. And is it part of your job to raise funds for the center? And what's your overall strategy that you found to be successful? And where do you see gaps where you would like to get more?
So, yeah, we've raised about $5 million since I've been here. We started out with about $2.5 million that had been raised to seed as seed funds. One of those gifts was an endowment gift. And so that's wonderful. It doesn't cover all our costs, but it really certainly helps. And so like the mentor learning, I think working with alums is fantastic. They are the folks who want to give back to the program. We've also found that funding, for example, our Loyal Angels program, I haven't shared about that with you yet. But that's a program where we're making angel investments in companies in Baltimore. And asks like that, where the funds or similarly, like the awards that go to the Baltimoreers, funding things that go directly back out into the community tend to be pretty easy asks to make. And again, it's like if I can get on the phone, if somebody will give me the time for a conversation, they're probably inclined to support us. So that's been great. You know, what's challenging, of course, is covering overhead. Nobody wants to pay for staff and those kinds of costs. So that's what's harder for us to fundraise for.
What would you like to see happen in a couple of years in your center? What's your greatest ambition?
You know, we are getting a lot of really positive feedback about the Loyal Angels program. And just briefly, we have a fund, the Loyal Angels Fund. It's $250,000. The funds go into angel investments. The investments are made based on recommendations by students. So we have a whole class, which is the Applied Angel Investing class. And students learn how to do due diligence and evaluate companies and make recommendations for those investments. So it's been very well received, certainly by the entrepreneurs who get a chance to get investment, also by the donors who are excited to be involved in this way, very much by the students who are so excited. One of them said, you know, normally the decisions I make about a class, it might affect me, it might affect my grade. In this class, the decisions I make, they're going to affect the outcomes for the company, that company. So there's tremendous responsibility. They took it really seriously. And because of that, I think they learned a lot. So we'd like to see it. We're going to continue with that program. We'd like to grow the fund. We'd like to, you know, get more students involved in that kind of activity. You know, and there might be some minors that develop around specializing in that kind of education. So there's some curricular development that I'm excited for us to see there. And again, you know, I'm thinking more about mentorship and how that might be something that we could grow again, pretty organically. And pretty low cost, but high impact. So my fear, as I've shared with you before, is bringing in a lot of people that have to be managed and a lot of relationships that might need to be brokered. But I do know that there are models out there that we could probably learn from about how to do that efficiently. Yeah.
I think there's one piece that we kind of talked about prior and we talked briefly about. But maybe you could talk a little bit more. What's driving this passion for diversity and inclusion in all your activities? And how is this part of your mission and the value proposition to Baltimore community?
Sure. So it's such a big question, but let me see what I can do. Because there are a lot of different answers. I mean, the most simple, the basic answer is that the gift that seeded the Simon Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship was given with the understanding that that the funds would be used to support a transformation in Baltimore, to support job creation and wealth creation in Baltimore, and to address inequities in this city. So, you know, from the get-go, we knew that that was part of our charge. It makes sense that that was something that we would be doing because of who we are as an institution. So Loyola is a Jesuit university. And so the Ignatian values, you know, are very much rooted in social justice. And so this university has also always had a big commitment to the city in which we're placed. And, you know, Baltimore is a majority minority city. It's losing population, including its Black population. Baltimore has a lot of challenges and has lost, you know, the hiring manufacturing base that used to make it a wealthy, thriving city. And so most of the folks who are here and are committed to the city have an understanding that the way to turn it around is to make sure to elevate the folks who are here and try to, you know, address a history, right, of redlining and, you know, historic structural inequity that, that, you know, requires a very, right, holistic response, but one little way, right, to try to create a change, we think, is through supporting entrepreneurs who are generating wealth in their communities.
Thank you so much for sharing this perspective. And I know it was a difficult question to answer, and I really appreciate other answers, like providing the details and you sharing your thinking. I really enjoyed talking to you.
It's great talking to you as well. I really appreciate you reaching out.
Thank you for tuning in to the Slice of Mentorship podcast. Today's episode was
with Wendy Bulger,
an amazing and a truly inspiring leader in economic development space. If you're interested in mentorship or are looking to build or scale your mentorship program, check out my website, Traction 5. So Traction 5 is a SaaS platform that can be used to create or upgrade a team mentorship program or an innovation program. And I look forward to engaging with you in the next episode.